Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Getting my dad to say I love you.
To say what?
Say he loves it.
Outrageous.
Bloody nonsense.
Hello and welcome back to season two of Getting My Dad to Say I Love You. I'm back with my dad. Hi, Dad.
Hello. Dad here.
Dad is here. Dad, season one went well. We got a write-up in the Sunday Times.
I know. I was quite surprised. It was alongside poor old Barry Cryer.
Rest in peace,
I knew slightly.
How did you know Barry Cryer?
Because he was a member. Well, he wasn't a member. Barry Cryer was one of these old-style 50s comedians who was extremely careful with his lolly. And he used to come to the Savage Club, which I'm a member of.
Yep.
And he was very entertaining. And for a long while, I thought he was a member.
Right.
Until one of the more serious committee members told me he wasn't.
He just liked to come in for some beers.
Yeah, he used to come in. He was great company. He was very nice. And he'd talk to anyone. But like a lot of comedians of that, and entertainers of that generation, he was very careful.
Sorry, what do you mean careful with his lolly? Is that a euphemism?
Careful with his money.
Oh, crap.
Lolly-read money.
Okay, good. I really
But there's
worried.
Nothing wrong with that.
Really worried it was lolly meant something different based on the shape.
No, lolly isn't. Lolly means dosh, or careful with his dosh. I don't know what you say in America.
All right, well.
But he was a really nice bloke, and he was very funny and very entertaining.
I know.
And anyway, we were featured alongside Barry Cryer.
That's good. Rest in peace, Barry Cryer. This is season two, as I said, in America, series two, as they say in the UK. We have the first guest of the series is Mr. Scroobius Pip. I sent you some research because you didn't know who Scroobius Pip was.
No, I didn't, but I know enough about it now to talk a little bit about it.
Yeah, he's a he.
Yeah, talk about Scroobius Pip is, well, you can talk it as a concept, but yes, Scroobius Pip is... Your man, Scroobius Pip, is a he.
He's a he.
But Scroobius Pip is a character in a Lear poem, which was unfinished by Lear when he died.
Yeah.
For Lear, Edward Lear, or Dodson, as he was known, was an English writer. And Scroobius Pip was, as I say, an unfinished poem, which was eventually finished off by an American poet who's probably a bit passé these days, called Ogden Nash.
Right. Yeah.
Not published until 1935, which was 40 years after Edward Lear died.
Yeah, Dad, that's great. You've done your research. Shall I go and chat to him now before we end up having a 400-minute intro of you describing the history of Scroobius Pip? Do you know what Scroobius Pip does? Do you know what he does career-wise?
He's a sort of musician.
Yeah, he's poetry, hip-hop.
Poetry, music.
He's a big podcaster. He's one of the OG podcasters. He did my old podcast maybe 10 years ago now. He's a lovely chap. He's also an excellent actor. I'm going to go chat to him about his parents to see why he is the way he is. So, Dad, yeah. I'll see you on the other side.
Okay, that sounds good.
All right. It's season two, as they say in America, series one, as we say in the UK. I'm such an American arsehole now. We've got Scroobius Pip. How you doing, mate?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. It's nice when people ask it back. It's always, it doesn't always happen, but it's nice when people do.
It's weird times at the moment because we've had so much stuff that the whole world is going through, but it really feels like at the tail end, the whole world is going through it complete of the pandemic stuff. The whole world's going through it completely different. Then obviously the war stuff.
Yes.
There's a lot of different reactions. So we're all experiencing the same thing, but to very varying degrees and levels, I guess. It's weird.
Yes. So therefore we need little platitudes and stuff to keep us sane and going. I didn't expect the war as a post-pandemic sorbet, but it's the one we've been given. So it's nice to have you, man. So first things first, I always like to ask this right out of the gate. Have both your parents said I love you to you before?
They have. They definitely have. Yeah. Again, I think with my dad, the kind of I love yous and hugs and that were very much a more recent development.
Yeah.
And an evolution. I'm sure I remember specific conversations about, you know, and we should hug, like when we, like actually discussing it and bringing in a hug every now and then. And yeah.
That's nice. Well, I think that's, that seems like not universal, but that seems like a more common thing. Cause I saw my dad in real life for the first time in just over 2 years because of pandemic and visa and all this stuff. And he was definitely more up for the hugsies than he was before, which it shouldn't have taken a global pandemic to cause our fathers to want to do that. But it's nice that they've decided to, I guess.
Yeah, I love that kind of thing. You know, it's all, and again, it's. I think all, I'm at the stage where all parent-based interactions, even anything that's kind of annoying, it's kind of amusing and adorable because, you know, parents are getting older. It is what it is. So yeah, I'm kind of, there's rarely anger or anything like that there. There's just, adorable. Yeah, that's, you dickhead.
I think that's extremely healthy. I think that's the way to be of it. Cause I can find myself sometimes getting frustrated and then you just go, that is the human that is what they are like. And if they're trying, that's all we can hope for. Right.
And it's also the accepting, we've grown up in very different societies, right? It's mad how much society has changed between even just these two generations. And whilst I think both of my parents have changed along with it really well and been really, they're positive people, there is still any of those small niggles or whatever, you kind of look and go, it's not going to change now, is it? Like, you just got to accept this for what it is.
Yeah, and have you always been, I mean, yeah, I think that's a nice philosophy, but I feel like it's a philosophy that we kind of can get more used to as we get a bit older. Have you, when you were younger, like you said, your dad has recently started doing it. Were you, you don't have to go into full detail, but you were emailing saying your parents have both been on your pod and they're split up and stuff. When you were younger, were you craving that sort of effusiveness that wasn't quite there from him? Or was it,
I think that was just kind of South London type families. I was definitely a bit of a mummy's boy. I would cry and have to be picked up if I went on scout camp and just embarrassing stuff like that because I didn't like being away from home. But but my dad, you know, he worked all the time. So again, it was that traditional 80s and 90s family dynamic of the mums at home bringing up the kids, dads at work. And working long hours. So yeah, it was interesting after they split up, the kind of, they split up when I was about 16.
Yeah.
And that's already a weird point, particularly for a father-son relationship, because you're like, you're trying to get to that, are we both men now? Are we pals kind of thing, rather than father-son? And there was weird times of, I think that was probably magnified or accelerated because of that, my dad feeling, I don't want him to think I don't care, or I don't want us to have a distance because I've moved out and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a weird age for that, because you're in that weird zone of like, did you have to do? I guess you're old enough. You go do weekends at your dad's. Is that the sort of thing that would happen?
It'd be particular nights. I'd go and hang out with my dad. And for us, again, this is so weird. But I love it. I kind of love it, because I love looking back now that we were clearly trying to find something to do together. So yeah. Me and my dad joined a gym together.
Oh, that, and we'd, that's and we'd so go, sweet.
We'd go to the gym, do a fairly mild workout. Then we'd go and have sunbeds. Again, I've never had a sunbed in my life until then, I don't think. And then we'd go home and have a pizza. So it cancelled out all the good of the gym, but it was kind of our ritual. And looking back now, it's clearly a, what do we do together? Because when it's young kids, there's a million things that you can go and do with your young kids. But when you're at that age that you're kind of tearing away from your parents a bit anyway and wanting that independence, to have that kind of, well, we need to see each other once a week and we need to do something.
I didn't think I was going to say this sentence on this podcast, but I want to just drill down a little bit more into the sunbeds of that. Is your dad loved going to sunbeds and he brought you to the sunbed? He must be an early adopter of male sunbed use, because I can't.
Yeah.
I think at university, me and some friends did it a little bit, and I kind of felt,
This is where it gets even weirder, I guess, because the gym and the sunbeds were at my college. So I'd come home from college, and then we'd go to college to the gym and use the sunbeds. I'm sure they were. I always remember my dad being a massive sunbather on holidays, all that kind of thing. And again, the sun's given, or pre everything's given you cancer. My dad was a big sunbather and a big smoker. So pre humans evolving to realize these things are really bad for you, I guess.
Yeah.
I think living in England, living in Essex, I guess being a fan of sunbathing, if the thing you love you only get to do a couple of times a year, then the adventure of sunbeds is an absolute treat, right?
Yeah, but you don't get the lovely kind of natural version of lying on a beach for 4 hours. You're basically just like toast. You're putting yourself in an electric toaster for eight minutes or something. You're not reading a magazine or anything.
No, it's a microwave rather than a slow bake, isn't it? The beach is a slow bake, and the sunbeds are a microwave. Yeah, it's a weird one. And the sunbeds would take it in turns, because I think they only had one or two or something, and they were in separate rooms or whatever.
The government was only giving colleges one sunbed on the part of their budgets back then.
Yeah, yeah. Tough times, bloody Tories. I remember it as a positive thing, because I think it was the first time I kind of had some kind of exposure to, and I'm going to use a word here that always makes me cringe, and I'm not even that into it, but mindfulness, because it was the only time that I'd really just be on my own, as you say, with nothing to read or nothing to listen to or nothing to do, even if it is for 10 minutes or 8 minutes or whatever it is. It was this kind of, right, just lay there with your thoughts.
That's interesting.
And then go home and have a pizza.
Have you? And
my thoughts would generally be about the pizza I'm about to have.
Of course.
It's going to be nice.
Have you done the, I've done it once out here, which feels very on brand for living in Los Angeles. Have you done the flotation, the deprivation? I did it once.
Done them
it
twice. Was I loved
amazing,
it.
Amazing, isn't it? Yeah. That first, maybe you get an hour, well, it was an hour when I did it. You get that first few minutes where you're like, this is odd. I don't know what I'll do. I don't know how I'll last an hour. And once you settle in and you just accept it, I think I nodded off, and it was just like, I felt so chilled afterwards.
Completely. I had exactly that. Now, as a kid, I had hypnosis because of my stammer, and the flotation tanks really reminded me of that, because on my hypnosis, I'd be starting to go under and I'd be thinking, right, I'm going to pay attention to what she says this time, because it wasn't like in TV shows or whatever. It was just kind of, I'm going to talk to your subconscious mind. You can listen if you want, blah, blah, blah. And I'd lay there thinking, right, I'm going to pay attention, because I want to know what she's saying to me in this hypnosis thing. I really want to make sure I'm paying attention and catching what she says. And around that point, she began, and we're bringing you out and free. And I've missed it all. And that was it on the flotation tank. There was 10 minutes of going, I don't know what I'm going to do. This is weird. I've got like an hour. And then it was, and your time's up. It was like, oh, it yeah. kind of just that bit, just you did find that kind of zen, I guess.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That thing where you're not in your head, which is 99.9% of our days is being, especially as people like trying to create and stuff. I think we're always in our heads. Oh, but that's so nice. So you and your dad did that. And then would your dad be open to a flotation tank, or is that's one step too far?
He's not tried one yet. For some reason after I tried one, like my mum's birthday was soon after. So I got her a voucher for one. She didn't find it anywhere near as relaxing.
Oh, really?
She felt completely uncomfortable. It's like, this is weird. I'm not sure I like it. She enjoyed it still, but it wasn't the relaxing experience that you and I seem to have.
That happens so much. I think we discussed this maybe with Carl Donnelly in the last week. When you get your parents a present, that you're like, because you, especially as you get older, you go, I found this cool thing, and now I want to like pass this on to you.
Yeah.
Again, 99% of the time, they know what they like and what they don't like, and just the idea of, even my mum's been, she's been going through some stuff recently health wise, and she's done therapy before, but I was like, I don't want to sound too LA, but I think like some therapy really good, because the mental side of it, you could just see her going like, that's just a hole. I can't be doing that. I've got enough shit going. My dad is the ultimate one. I'm like, I think you'd telling someone you think they'd benefit from therapy though is, I'm sure they just think you're going, I'm telling you you're a wrong or a bad person, which isn't what you're doing. But it's hard.
It's really interesting with any health stuff like that, because again, it's mad that we spend our lives kind of doing as we're told, as on that side of the relationship. And when we become adults ourselves and want to kind of impart some ideas or some wisdom, it is often hard to get through. I've got a couple of close mates whose parents have gone through dementia recently, and it's a terrifying and horrible thing. And there's things like that. I don't think either of my parents are in that place yet, but it's likely. Or there's a good chance it will happen at some point, but the idea of bringing up to a parent, next time you're at the doctor's, like, get them to start doing the dementia tests and stuff like that, because it is good for you to keep you aware of your mind. But bringing anything like that up just feels incredible, because as you say, it feels like you're saying, all right, you loon, go and talk to someone else about your shit. I don't want to have to keep dealing with it. It's like, no, it's, but I think all of that stuff's really important, but it's so hard to bring up. And
I think that's also cut of that dementia. I mean, that's also, that's affected in close people to my family recently, actually. It's difficult to stay open-minded to stuff without it taking stuff personally. It's very hard. I do think that's an interesting, I'm not a 70 something year old person yet, but I do think when you're probably that age, you're very aware of your mortality, and anything that reminds you more of that is terrifying. So I get it. People just put it in the corner of the brain and don't look at it too much is a way of coping.
It's interesting. I think my dad, again, just going off my instinct, my dad probably has more of that awareness of mortality, awareness of aging and not being happy about it kind of thing. And again, understandably, I'm 40 and I'm not too pleased about it. But on my mum's side, it feels like she's just like, yep, this is great. I'm fine. I'm getting older, but I think it's interesting because I think it probably reflects their parents, because my mum's mum was fit and healthy and perfectly cognizant until the day she died. My dad's mum did start to lose her mind a little bit and go down depressions and bad health and all sorts of other things. So again, it's kind of course they're going to have deviated off in those two directions, because one has looked at their mum and gone, oh, that's me. I'd love to live like that, you know, be healthy until I'm not, as it were.
Yeah, you're right. It doesn't. Yeah, you've now reminded me of a thought I hadn't had for a long time. My dad, I remember, it's weird, the shit your parents say to you just repeatedly. He said to me so much as a kid, like, just if I'm ever, and just pull the plug on me. If I'm just always, and but he said that, I was like eight. I'm like, what are you talking about? Pull the plug on you.
My mum from early days until now has always said, if I start to lose it, just put me in a home. Put me in a home, just don't worry about it. Don't feel guilty and all that kind of thing. So, yeah.
Oh, interesting. That's a, because I've been wrestling that recently because of, I don't mind. I just think I can be honest about this, actually. I was fine weird going, my mum recently got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer.
Wow.
Which is very, and then I was stuck in America. And so much shit going on in my head with guilt. But she's been so, I got to go back and see her and was helping for a few weeks, and my dad's, you know, it's all quite stressful, but she's always been like, no, you've got to go live your life and stuff. And yeah. I like to think if I was in that position, I did say, but you know, that bit of my problem, no, just stay
after
stay near me, because it's very tiring and draining, that sort of thing. But yeah, it's interesting how there's those two, it's two different. I hope I'll be that person that goes, just go and live your life, because you kind of, it's kind of the point of being a parent, isn't it? You bring someone up to do
both
that.
My parents have always been really supportive in that kind of thing, from doing music at an early age and then moving into acting and podcasting and whatever else. They've always been mad supportive of,
really?
The weird career choices I have.
Even from, how old were you when you first, sorry to cut you off, but how old were you when you were like, I'm going to do this alternative route into career-wise from school?
It felt like that was from school, yeah. It felt like from school it was like, I don't want to go and work in the city. Like, my area is a commuter town. You go and get a train into London and you work and you come back. And I didn't want to do that. And I worked in shops, factories, delivering big bags of flour, all sorts of stuff, just anything to not do that. And then when I started to do music, I'd quit my job. And my mum reminded me of this recently, actually, because of another podcast. Just before I went off on, I bought a van and I was just going to go off and try and tour. Had no bookings, had no gigs. I was just going
to love it, mate.
Play on street corners, hit open mics, just try and make it work. And just before I went away, she took me aside and said, "What are your goals here? Because it's a really hard industry to make a living or whatever else." And apparently, I said to her, "I want the people that I respect to respect me." Or the people that I'm a fan of to have heard of me, or, you know, that kind of thing. And she was like, right, that's a good goal. Like, that's not, I want to be number one in the charts. I want to be this or I want to be that. She was like, okay, yeah, that sounds good. Go off and try your best to do that. And yeah.
That's great. I love that. I love that sort
of concept. I'd forgotten it completely. And she reminded me.
How old are you at this point, you think?
So, I got into all of this late. I was 23 or 24 when I started to go off and try and do music. And it was because I'd started to do rather well in retail, Chris.
You gave that up.
That's it. I'd got to that kind of assistant manager type level. And I thought, right, either concentrate on this and accept that this is my life, or go and do what I'm saying I want to do. Like, it was always kind of, oh, this is a means to an end. I'm working on a record. I'm working on this. I'm working on that. And it was that point that I was like, right, the next step up, I need to just get my head down and go, cool, I'm in retail. It is what it is. Like, this is what I'm, and I'll do it well. Or, yeah, step
That's
off,
interesting.
The, off the train at that point and go, right, let's, like, my whole thing was, I said to my mum, again, I think it helped get it across. I was like, look, I'm going to try for a year. And if it doesn't work out in a year, I'll be able to go back. I've got good. the people in HMV really like me. So, I've got these contacts. So,
I mean, to be fair, now you say it's HMV, mate, that's one of the cooler retail. I used to work at Baby Gap for a period.
Yeah.
And I was not good at that. I didn't
have a lot of your passion and love there, are you? At least I'd be running the DVD section and, like, yeah, I'm getting good stuff in. This is exciting.
Yeah. You just reminded me of when there was a sale at HMV once, and a man I'd never met was so excited that Beverly Hills Cop 3 was only £5, and he was just like, "Mate, it's only £5." I'm caught up in it, and I'm like, "Just so you know, that's by far the worst of the three Beverly Hills Cops."
Fill my boot up, I'll have a ball. Genuinely, the hardest thing to walk away from was the staff discount, because you got like, I'm sure it was something like 30 or 40% off, including sale items. So, yeah, it was mad. That was why I was there for so long as a film nerd and a music nerd. It was like, I can't have another job. Like, even if it pays a bit more, I'll be spending twice as much because I've not got my discount.
Come here, son.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
What's interesting about that, and you got support from your mum, and then I feel there's two things that everyone I've interviewed has in common. You got, have a creative fearlessness, but also like a crazy work ethic. So you said you said he's like working a lot. What was he doing? Because I sort of think by osmosis anyway, all I remember my dad telling me was like, don't ever become a lawyer. But I saw he's working all the time. He wasn't telling me all the time, work your ass off. I think just by seeing that, you're ingrained. If I want to do something, got to work. So what, did that.
100%. He definitely installed the work ethic in me. Again, he came up in that Thatcherite type era where people are trying to, where the Tories were essentially motivating the working classes by saying, work harder, work loads of hours, and you'll be like us.
The original gaslighters, the Tories.
Yeah, exactly. So again, I think he'd come up in that, and he definitely set a work ethic in me. I think as I got older, I realised he'd set too much of a work ethic in me, and I didn't have enough of the balance. Mm. And I've done a lot to correct that now. But that's 80s Tories kind of propaganda, and rap. Like rap has always been about hustling and outworking everyone and all that kind of thing, and you can get to the top. And it's like, there's a balance in all these things. But yeah, my dad worked in, he was a great example of that. He worked in uniforms, and he started off literally sweeping the floors at one of the places he worked. And by the end of his career, he retired as a director of the company. So that real kind of, not really much education, had a few bits here and there, I think. But yeah, just exactly as you say, got his head down, worked hard.
And then where do you think, because the thing that I think is interesting about you, I mean, there's lots of things that are interesting about you, but I really admire is your sort of, you talked about that hustle from hip hop. Is that is that what you think's kind of, or maybe, I'm just wondering if there's a mum link to this in any way, but like the fact that you've kind of, you've built up a lot of stuff yourself rather than waiting for permission from does that make sense? We all have to wait for permission in some way from the gatekeepers of this industry, but you're like, I love this. How long have you had your podcast for?
So I've had the podcast for 8 years now.
8 years. Because I think, I'm trying to remember when you, me and Carl had this sort of nonsense one and you came on us again. I think that's about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But you from there, I don't know, I just like this, the fact you've kind of gone, I don't know why it's not even linked really, but just the fact you've gone, all right, I love this. I love chatting to interesting people and I'm just going to do that and then not ask for permission. I kind of, that's something not everyone has in this industry.
Mate, I've had to be reminded of it a lot recently because since... And the pandemic helped and a conversation with Michael Smiley helped, but...
Oh, that guy's the nicest, funniest fucking guy.
He's a legend. He's a legend. But having done all my music off my own back, you know, mm-hmm. I set up my own record label for my solo records. Kickstarter didn't exist, so I saved up for 5 years in retail to kickstart my debut record, all that kind of thing. And then, as you say, with the podcast just going, bang, let's do it. And then I moved into acting and script writing, and you're waiting on everyone else's permission constantly. It's an industry of that. It's an industry of waiting for someone to say, yes, you've been greenlit, or you're allowed to do that. And Smiley kind of took me aside just before the pandemic started, and I was talking to him about some scripts I'm working on and how they were in development, and then they hit a wall and this and that. And he was like, who gave you permission to make your music videos? I was like, well, no, just me and my mates made them and we figured it out. And who gave you permission to do it? I was like, do it yourself. So I've then started going, right, what scripts? Because again, it's not as simple as that. It's simple, but it's not as simple as that. And I've started going through scripts and ideas and gone, right, which ones can just I make, or me and my mates make, or I finance or whatever, and which ones need to be, this needs to be pitched to Netflix or whomever else it may be.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's been the start of this year has been a real right. I need to start looking at the TV and film industry the way I looked at the music industry and the podcast industry, and just go, right, here's what I want to do.
Yeah, you remind me of, I mean, Gervais, I remember when they got The Office made, he was like, we had to go make that because that was the only way to show people. I mean, you still have to get permission at some point there, I guess.
Yeah.
But it's still like, you're right. It's that sometimes I think the further into this industry we get, the more we forget the amount of off our own back hustling we're doing. And then you relax. And you've got to remember, these people making the decisions, they don't care about your shit as much as you care about your shit. So you just have to...
Of course. So rightfully so as well. Like, rightfully so. They've got their own shit. That's why they're there. I don't care about their shit as much as I care about my shit. So it's a two-way street in that respect, you know?
Do you think that's purely a hip-hop base? Because your dad's, you know, he was at companies doing his thing. It was your mum, I guess, she was looking after the kids. Is there... I think I know I get a lot of this, like, I don't care about other people, just back yourself for my dad, because he's to a fault though. Sometimes he's doing stuff and I'm like, you need to just talk to other people before you go rogue on this one.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it is.
I think it's both of them. As soon as we were old enough, my mum got a job because we weren't rich enough to be a one income family. And she worked in libraries largely. And libraries are the home of back yourself, do it yourself. There's a whole education there to just go in and go, right, well, do you want to know everything in the world? Because you can if you want, or you could not. Do you know what I mean? It's all there.
That's interesting.
All this education is there. All this knowledge is there. And for so much of my youth, I very much chose getting drunk or doing drugs or music, obviously being a huge part. And then it was only when I'd left school kind of thing that I was like, oh, hang on, I want to learn a bit. I want to be better educated. And libraries, and yeah, they were, my mum and my brother ended up working in the libraries as well, were always huge advocates of how important libraries are for a community, for people who can't afford a lot of things. You know, there's so much that's there for free for the community. And I think, yeah, there's a bit of that in there as well.
I don't know who said that. Someone told me, a famous person said this phrase once, but education is wasted on the youth, right? And I've similarly had the same. I mean, I'm very lucky. I went to a very good school and all that, but I did this stuff. I didn't care. Yeah. I didn't care about it. And then you get to your early 20s and you're like, oh fuck, I want to know. Yeah. I want to know stuff. And yeah, I've never quite thought of a library as being, I mean, it's the original internet, but it's a place where you're right. It's completely. Like you're given the option to just snog someone in the corner behind some stuff, or you can actually pick up anything. And yeah, that's fucking, that's very astute of you.
It's all there, man. And again, the kind of the nightmare of realizing these things after school is teachers are really handy for pointing you in the right direction, like having someone to go, I'm quite interested in this, like, who should I read? Not having that, again, it's changed obviously with the internet, but I think I lucked out. My older brother has influenced me kind of reading wise, artistically, and all that kind of thing.
And what does your brother do, if you don't mind me?
He's either parent.
Yeah, is he's just a fan of that sort of thing, or is he into that in those industries?
He got a master's in philosophy, and then he's continued to write and study us, essentially. Yeah, he's
How much older is he?
3 years older than me.
Interesting. So.
And yeah, easily the most well-read and educated person I know, and so much of my education has come from him either giving me a book or us having conversations and me getting a book and or getting a bit of information and going and reading up. Even more so, me hearing it from him, not doing any further research and just leaving it at that very shallow level of I've got a bit of knowledge.
Well, but that's it's like a free live podcast where you can just pick up a tidbit and not have to do any more research and tell other people that you know stuff. That's really interesting. And your brother's 3 years older than you. Normally, I expect like an older brother to be an arsehole and beat up their younger brother. But Socrates is your older brother.
When we were kids, 100%, we would fight and be a nightmare all the time. He got suspended a lot from school. He was a real kind of tear away until he decided not to be. And then, it was that kind of when he went off to uni and I was kind of in my college years, I guess, which is around when my parents split up. So a big chunk of that was kind of me at home with my mum on my own, I guess. Yeah. I think my brother had probably gone off and was living in Wales at that point.
That's interesting. So, he was ill disciplined. Were your parents strict on that stuff as well? Like, when you got in trouble, would they were you also in trouble as much as him, or not really? Or?
Not as much, but a bit. They were. I guess my memory is that my mum was always the disciplinarian of the two. I'm sure I remember, particularly at a young age, my mum being the quite strict one, or the one that we're scared of. And my dad almost being the
one trying to be your mate. Your dad's trying to be the mate, and you think this guy's fun. And then when you get older, you go, some of the stuff that wasn't good parenting, right? Does that relate?
That wasn't a good idea.
Does that relate? Yeah.
100% on things like that. But so I guess, I'm trying to think of timelines are so hard to patch up. But I'm sure it wouldn't have been, at least it wouldn't have been long after they separated that my brother went off to uni. Again, I think I probably wasn't didn't get in as much trouble as my brother, so I probably got it a lot lighter because he'd set a bad example as such. like he's gone and got suspended again. I've got a detention. They're going to be like, it's a detention. Who cares?
That's funny. It's like following an open micer at a stand-up gig. You don't have to be that funny. You just got.
I don't have to be that good.
You have to be competent. You have to just say stuff with vague confidence. That's interesting. And then, so you said, and in your email to me, you said your parents are now very good friends still, despite divorce. Have they got separate families and stuff, or is that?
No. Not at all. My dad did have a partner for a long while, but they split up fairly recently. When we could only have one household around for the Christmas in the pandemic, my dad went round my mum's, and I was in Canada shooting a TV show at the time. But my dad went round my mum's still regularly for Christmas. We'll all go round my mum's, or they'll both come round here on Christmas Day and things like that. For years as a kid, it was Christmas Day was with my mum and Boxing Day was with my dad. And that was kind of how we divided it up. But then when we're all older and everyone gets on better.
That's interesting that they get on better now. Because I guess in the build, I've not been through a divorce, although my parents, I'm sure, have their tumultuousnesses. I don't want to go into too much detail, but fully running that by them. But they had, I remember like crazy arguments as a teenager and as a kid and just hearing it sitting on the stairs and stuff. Do you remember having those thoughts as a kid? I always used to think it would be better if you guys like,
yeah,
exactly. It sounds mean because it's not my bias. Sometimes I think you'd be happier just doing this, guys.
It's why I had them on my podcast to talk about their divorce, because I think there's not enough positive divorce stories.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's accurate.
Because you're completely right. Because before that, it was a lot of shouting and arguments, a lot of the door slamming and my dad's car pulling away because he'd have to go for a drive to calm himself down. And there was a lot of that. And when they split up initially, it was heartbreaking. I'm a kid. I don't know how this works. This is bizarre. Mm-hmm. This is my mum and dad. I don't understand it. But I'd say it was within a year or so that I was like, oh no, this was the right choice. Like, you're both happier. Good. There's less tension. Everyone can be happier. Obviously, it sucks to not have my dad in the house and all that, but we're getting to spend time together. And again, there's even a thing there of couples talk about this a lot, of when you don't live together, when you meet up, it's exciting and you're doing things and there's this. But when you do live together, it then becomes the normal and you never go out and never do anything. So I think if we all lived at home, me and my dad probably wouldn't have joined a gym together.
That's true. Yeah.
Let's say that. True. So again, I think there's things like that. And I think we started going to football more than we ever had. And we'd always gone to football, but that went through the roof because that was a me and my dad thing, you know?
Yeah.
And for a period, me, my brother and my dad, but my brother stopped being into football. And that, again, that remained for a long time. That was a thing that we did together. And yeah.
I was just thinking that could be like two ways, couldn't it? You could have, if your dad's not there, then when you meet up, there's so much I guess it's like a weird pressure of it, like this has to be fun and good. But then on the flip side, it just gives you a bit more time to just choose an activity or not take each other for granted. I think that's probably a lot of it, isn't it? It's like,
I think that's why we fell into here's the things that we do. So it's the gym and it's the football, so there's no pressure on here's what we're deciding to do this week. Oh, is it going to be shit? Is it going to be good? Do you know what I mean? It's like, here's the things we do and we enjoy and we'll do them.
That's it.
Like, no having to come up with a new thing every week. And because again, that must be hard for parents of separated families, particularly with younger kids. If you're the one that has them at the weekend, there is a pressure, as you say, to go, what? It's going to be this awesome weekend. And that pressure isn't on at the house, if you know what I mean.
It's funny. You're making me think what my dad and me would do as a combined. My dad's, because he loves like old paper documents. He honestly is like, he was born 150 years ago. He'd be perfect in a Dickens novel or something. Mm. But he's sweet. But in terms of what we have in common, I'm like, he loves all these old. The one thing he loves is going to the pub. I remember once I was on the way to university, he drove me up there and we stayed the night in a bed and breakfast above a pub. And he went, have a pint. I went, I don't really want to, like a nerd. I didn't want to get drunk before the first day of university. And he was so sad that I turned down beer with him. But something healthier, like, I wish he'd had an interest in going to the gym or something.
Well, I've had that in recent years. And again, I think it's a generational thing because fathers and sons in the UK relate over drinks or over food. And I had a period which has kind of continued on where I got out of the pizza after the gym period and started eating healthy and not really drinking. And I think it did flummox my dad once or twice, because he'd be like, oh, I've not seen you this week, do you want to go out to the pub or do you want to go out for a meal? And I'd be like, no, I'm eating healthy in the week, so I don't want to go to the pub, I don't want to eat a takeaway, so come up with something else. And it's tough then, isn't it? If that's your connection points, it's like, I'm up for seeing you, but I'll just come round and we'll hang out if you want. But I think there is a thing in, again, particularly that kind of generation, that it's like, no, what we do, or no, more in just Britishness, because I've had that with mates as well since I've kind of eased up on drinking. I've had it with mates who are like, oh, I ain't seen you in a while, let's go for a drink. I'm like, nah. And genuinely, I said this to him, I was like, and let's go for a walk. And we had a lovely walk and we caught up and it was great. But again, it's like, I don't want to go, if I'm not drinking, there's not much appeal of sitting in a pub drinking water for hours on end.
Was it?
Like, come around my house and we'll hang out in my living room. You know, I still want to see the person. It's just...
That's funny. It's like, I think the late, great Norm MacDonald said a funny thing about not drinking when you're being the designated driver. You're just sitting in a round a big oak table, just nothing, just sitting there not drinking. It's boring.
It's a bizarre situation. I completely agree.
So with the they seem really supportive. Do your parents listen to your podcast? They check out everything you've been on and all that sort of thing? Are they?
Yeah. I think they dip in and out sometimes on the podcast. Again, I think during the pandemic, both of their podcast listening has gone through the roof a bit. So I think my dad in particular now listens to more than ever. He'll probably be listening to this, so I'm hoping I've painted him in a positive light.
No, you've painted him a very positive, perfectly tanned light.
But yeah, so yeah, they've always been supportive of all that. And like in the music days, my mum, because when my parents split up, my mum was adamant, and it's something she got off her mum when my granddad died. Her mum was adamant to make sure she knew that she's okay doing things on her own, as weird as that sounds. So going out for a meal on her own, or going to the theatre on her own. And my mum was adamant in doing that when her and my dad split up, because she was like, I don't want to just get into another relationship because I'm not comfortable being on my own. So with my tours in music, every time a tour had come out, my mum would have a look and see where she wants to go and have a little holiday. And sometimes she'd come on her own, or sometimes she'd go with a mate of hers, and they came and saw us in New York, in Bristol, in Scotland, I think in Europe at one point. And it was all to go, right, I want to go somewhere and I've got a reason to, and I'm going to go and watch. And my mum would always be dancing along and bouncing up and down and having a lovely time.
I think that's a really healthy level of support, because we've talked on this before about you can have the overly like, I'm just obsessed with everything you're doing and like but that's nice. It's like it's for you and for them. That's something really. Your mum sounds a very healthy person in the mind, that she's like I. Because also I know, we all know people who can't be on their own, so they just go into dog shit relationships. So that's one thing. And then to go and like, I'm going to have a nice time, I'm going to see my son. Your mum, she should be doing mindfulness classes, mate. That's she's on the ball.
The amount of tweets and stuff I'd get after gigs, people going, I spent the whole night with your mum, she's the best. We did like we've been drinking, we went to the bar, I got her a drink, we made sure she was all right and all that kind of thing. It was like always wonderful. So yeah.
That's such a nice, that's so nice as well that you, I mean, you know, the sort of running theme of this is we're all just trying to make our parents proud, but to literally bring joy to your parents is such a sort of special and privileged thing to do. Cause I don't think, you know, parents can get their pride from loads of different ways, but yeah, to actively see you creating something in front of her that makes her beam is so lovely.
It's made me think of something there. There's a great podcast called Born Human, and it's about parenting, and they did an episode recently called Parenting Your Parents, and it's about, again, it's some mates of mine, it's about the people who are going through their parents having a dementia and that kind of a switch of roles. And it came to mind then, because you're completely right. We spend our lives just wanting our parents to be proud of us. And I've had numerous times in recent years where I've felt really proud of my parents. And it's been that split, or like that flip, like either when they've been on the podcast and it's got a good reaction, or as said at a gig, if someone tweets me to say, I stood with your dad on the balcony, or I was over there with your mum and they were lovely and all that, and makes you just go, oh man, I'm glad I've not got dickheads for parents, because from the area I'm from, it's possible. Like there's a lot of
course
at my school, there was a lot of, and still I still live in the same area, and there's a lot of racism, a lot of homophobia, a lot of just ignorance, and my parents ain't that. And it's a real a thing of a real interesting thing to have these moments of, to get to be proud of your parents.
You've reminded me of a funny little story that combines a lot of what you're saying, because I do think that's, I think we should celebrate. I, I'm always up for, because I think we all agree, like, you know, I'm sure this podcast talks about this, getting your parents to sort of change and be open-minded is such a struggle. Yeah. So when they do anything, it's a lovely thing. So on my wedding day, it's up in Edinburgh, and my mum, she suffered from agoraphobia for many years. So she didn't really leave her little area of West London. And then sort of I said to her, like, well, if I get married, it might be in Scotland. And so obviously I'd love you to be there, but I don't want to force you. And then she kind of did, like I said, she'd done some therapy for that, and she got over it and she came up. And so I gave a speech and I, you know, jokes and things. And then I said, like, I'm really happy my mum's made these steps. And then there was fucking loads of speeches. And then a drunk friend of Hannah, my wife, who come from, she was hammered. She just got up and did an impromptu speech. It was just like blabbering nonsense. Anyway, so at the end of it, I'm like, see my mum. I go, Mum, did you like the speech? She's like, what was your favourite speech? She goes, I really like the Australian girl speech. You made me cry. And I was like, fuck you.
Amazing.
This is why I do what I do, because I, you know, it. You never give us the full thing, but this is funny. Yeah. That's the treacle cutter, that one.
That was the most assured 5 minutes I've ever done, and I still didn't go over.
I was funny. I was bigging you up. It's like, no. Drunk lady made me cry.
I was certain that I couldn't fail on this gig, and there you go. There's always one.
I know, there's always one. You can never please everyone, and especially my mum. So we're gonna, before we wrap this up then, so that I think that's, yeah, I love this. It's like, your parents sound like, I'm excited that they're listening, and I want, thanks for raising a great son. I'm gonna say that right now. Do you know what I want to play you? My dad, so this is new for this series. I've got him to research some of my guests.
Amazing.
And I've asked him to just ask, I'd love to have him on this, like, with us, but he's just too kind of his own. I don't know what, he'd either fall asleep or start giving the history of Charles Dickens out of nowhere that we haven't asked for. So yeah. I've asked him to come up with one question. So he wasn't, sadly, he wasn't already on your mailing list or anything like that, but I did get him to research you.
Perfect.
So, I know. Tell John Martin to sort his life up. Here's the question he's got for you.
Have you thought of rewriting the Ogden Nash end to Scroobius Pip?
Have you thought about rewriting the Ogden Nash end to Scroobius Pip? Because he looked up where your name comes from. It's Edward Lear's, correct?
Yes, it's from the Edward Lear poem, yeah.
And he wants to know if you thought of Ogden Nash has apparently redone the poem. Is that right?
I was not aware of that. and again, this is the perfect thing, because again, it goes back to my... to my upbringing is because I started off doing spoken word as well, and you know, I'm called Scroobius Pip, a lot of people would think this guy is very well educated, and the reality is, while I was on the HMV, as well as £5 DVDs of Beverly Hills Cop 3, yeah, they had a little book of cats' names and a little book of dogs' names, and in the little book of dogs' names was Scroobius Pip, and that's where I got it. I then went back and read the book, read the poem, and thought it really fitted perfectly. But yeah, people often assume, as your dad has, that I'm some kind of expert on Scroobius Pip.
I love that.
I got it out of a dog names book, mate. Sorry, may... I'll help you.
I'll see what he thinks about. I love that. There's nothing
Ogden
more.
Ogden Nash should be a great name for a dog.
Ogden Nash would be a great name for a dog.
Yeah. I love a two-name dog. I love
a double name.
I love giving pets full names.
Yeah, my dog's is actually called Santi, and everyone goes, oh, Santi is really cute. But he's named after Santi. He's called Santi Cazorla. That's his full name. He's named after an Arsenal player. So it's not as exotic and metro as people think it is. It was either that or Ian Wright, but I got ixnayed on calling my dog Ian Wright, sadly.
That would have been perfect as well.
I love it when I love that sort of thing when people think something's... you must know this when you're writing scripts, send them to execs and all, and they go, hey, man, I really loved what you did there. It was really interesting. You kind of, the way you brought in that, and you're just like, no, I thought it was funny. So I just, yeah, that bit was just funny. I put it in because it was funny.
I had the best one in my music. So on the first album me and Dan Lesac did, we had a song called Letter From God to Man, and it was one of our most popular ones. And it's, yeah, the basic idea is it's God writing to humans and going, oh, sorry, I've been a bit quiet. here's what I think about what you've done. and the last track on our last album was a song called You Will See Me, which is actually just a big breakup song. But someone hit me up after the album was out and went, is You Will See Me a reply to Let From God to Man? And honestly, line for line, it works as a reply.
Amazing.
And I wish I'd written it like that, but I haven't at all. I paused over that reply on the comment for so long to go, do I David Lynch it and claim it? Because I'm convinced half of what Lynch does is go, yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah, definitely. And yeah, I came so close to just claiming it. I thought, no,
You could be kind to yourself and say your subconscious mind
was doing it. Subconsciously, I've written this reply as a thing. That's, but yeah.
It's literally,
the person said it, and then I literally went through, and I'm like, oh, man. Ah! If I'd done this on purpose, I'd be so much better a writer.
You're like, it's like when someone does a cross and it goes in off the bar and they go, did you mean that? And they're like, yeah, I meant that. I said, no, man, you were trying to hit the back post and didn't put enough swag on it.
Yeah.
That's so funny. Brilliant. All right, mate, thanks for being so open and
your pleasure.
The last thing I get everyone to do is my dad, you know, he's an awesome guy. I love him a lot. I know he loves me. He still has this sort of issue with saying the three words. So what I like my guests to do is just give a little sort of pep talk to him to encourage him to just rip off that Band-Aid and say, I love you. I think partly he's worried if he says it, I'll no longer have him on the podcast. And if he says it, it's game. The podcast's
done. Kills the format, right?
It does. I mean, it really shits on the title. Yeah.
It's like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? It's like, they've won it. Let's fucking call it a day. Leave it.
Yeah. We change it to We Now Have a Millionaire. If you've got any little pearls from your parental relationships or anything, you said your dad started doing the hugs and the I love you a bit more. Anything you can tell John Martin, just sort of speak to him right now and I'll play this to him.
John Martin, what I would say is, I said, my dad took a while to get more comfortable with the I love yous and the hugs. And again, I think this is getting heavy now, but I think the realization of mortality through losing his parents and family members and stuff like that opened him up. But more important than anything, look at how well little Christopher's doing. He's out there in LA. He's a proper writer. He's proper in the industry. It's not like that stand-up bit where it was, I'm doing stand-up, but, you know, anyone who gets up and does 5 minutes can call themselves a stand-up. Now, he's doing the comedy right. He's doing the writing. I think he deserves, I think he's earned an I Love You. So, yeah.
I love it.
Just give it a little go. Try it on and see how it fits.
What a lovely way to end it. We'll see if it works. There's no guarantees, but I love what you were saying. And before we wrap it up then, mate, fully, what is there anything you want to tell people about? Obviously, your podcast, brilliant. If people don't listen to it, they should listen to it. Anything else?
Yeah, man. The podcast is, again, it's been a lifesaver, because you'll know as well, in this industry there's so many ups and downs and dry points and quiet points, and having the podcast to do every week just has kept me sane. But yeah, just I've moved into acting and writing, and I've fallen in love with it, man. As I said, the original plan was similar to what I did with HMV, was to take, where I said I'm going to try music for a year, I stopped music and said I'm going to try acting for a year, and if it doesn't work out, I'll come back to music. And I'm 7 years in now, I think, or 6 years in maybe, and I can't get enough. So yeah, I'm adoring it all. So keep an eye out for anything, or if there's any, you know,
what's the shit? Get Scroobius in your show. Do you know what's funny? It was just having been in a writer's room, you see the tapes. It's very interesting how decisions are made and stuff. So you see the other side. So you just gotta, it's just the thing, you gotta keep doing it, take nothing personally. You
100%,
never know.
Man.
You look right for the 99% of it is just looking right for the part.
Yeah, like starting off in acting, before I even had an agent, I hustled meetings with so many of the casting directors in London, and I did the same in LA, because I was like, I'm 6'4" with a big beard. I want to get in a room with you and have a conversation, so you can kind of go, all right, well, I get this person a bit. Because again, I'm not necessarily the big thuggy guy that my stats and measurements might suggest. So it's kind of throwing that combination. But the other thing, again, I think it's a blessing I didn't end up going to drama school and stuff like that, because self-tapes are the highlight of my week, mate. And again, I've got good 90% of the time at clicking send and forgetting about them and not caring. Obviously, there's always that 10% that you're like,
oh,
have
mate.
I got it? Did I hear anything?
Of course.
90% of them, it's a joy to just get to do it and fuck about and go, here we go, I've played a character.
You have the correct attitudes to doing them.
Yeah.
Is take nothing personally, enjoy it. And then 100%. That's a good philosophy for most of life. When you're next out here, mate, let's go for a walk. I'm not going to invite you. We're not going for a drink.
I know. I'm up for it. I mean, Brits in LA, we've got to hit Runyon and
we've got to go, and
Earth Cafe. And
or as they like to call it here, a hike, but it is just a walk up an incline, but it's not a hike. There's no crampons worn.
It's a steep walk.
Awesome. Guys, check out, go make sure you subscribe to Distraction Pieces. It's excellent. And this is just, I could chat to you all day, but I think there's an optimum time for podcasts according to the algorithms. You can tell this guy's been working for Netflix.
I love it.
Mate, awesome to chat to you.
It's been a pleasure.
Love to your family. Love to you. Loved having you on here, mate. Cheers, buddy.
To John Martin.
Of course. Always to John.
A podcast from producer Paul.co.uk.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.